Ask almost anyone how Lyme disease is transmitted, and most people will tell you from a deer tick. Ask them where someone gets it, and most people will say in the woods, from camping or hiking. That is true, but actually, you can get it right in your own backyard. In fact, that's where many people are infected with Lyme disease. Lyme disease, if not treated early, can wreak havoc on your health. Unfortunately, there is no vaccine to prevent it, but there is treatment. The best way to keep Lyme disease away is through steps that you can take to prevent it. Lyme disease is a public health problem and endemic in New York and surrounding states. Lyme disease is often misdiagnosed. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us. We are live in the studios, and you're listening to Health in 30 on WRCR AM 1300 Radio Rockland and streaming live at WRCR.com. I'm your host, registered nurse Barbara Ficarra. Joining me today is Pat Smith, president of the Lyme Disease Association. Together, we'll be talking about Lyme disease and prevention and treatment, and we'll answer any questions you have. You can call in at 845-624-1300. Hi, Pat. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thank you very much for having me today.
Lyme disease, often misdiagnosed and is truly a disease that needs more attention to the public. And I think most people do believe that you need to be in the woods to get it. Could you just let the listeners know how severe a problem this is?
Sure. Actually, you do not have to be in the woods. Many people get it in their own backyards. What happens is the ticks like places that are on the edges of woods, for example, or on the edge of a field or something like that, because what happens with the deer tick is, in order to feed, it will climb up. It's under the leaf debris. It will climb up on low vegetation, and then when an animal brushes by that vegetation, the tick will get on the animal or the person, and it will bite them, and that's how it feeds. So those areas are you're particularly vulnerable. So if you're walking along a trail, for example, you might want to stay down the center of a trail. You might want to keep the area near, if you're near a wooded area, your backyard, you might want to keep that separated by a buffer to keep the ticks away, a cleared buffer, or perhaps you want to remind your, you know, keep something there to remind yourself not to go any closer to, you know, the wooded area. And, you know, it's very a problem because people do feel that you have to go in the woods. Obviously, your risk may increase in that area, but you definitely don't have to be in the woods.
Now, doesn't the tick, it becomes infected. It could become infected from mice or squirrels or chipmunks. Is that right? Because the bacteria normally lives in those animals?
Yes. It usually what happens is the tick will bite a small mammal of some type, particularly in our area, particularly white-footed mice and chipmunks. But it can bite other small animals also and gets the disease. And then in the next stage, it can bite you or it can bite a larger mammal and, infect that animal.
So we mentioned the backyard and woods, if people are hiking or camping. And what about the beach? Isn't it true that the dunes also can carry the ticks?
If you have a beach area that has vegetation, like the dunes often do to try to keep the dunes in place, if you have a different kind of ground cover, any kind of ground cover, the tick, if it's out in the sunlight for a long period of time, it can become dehydrated. So it stays under ground cover. So if you have to walk, for example, through a dune area to go to a beach, it can possibly harbor ticks in that particular area, yes.
Now, with Lyme disease, unfortunately, there is no vaccine. Prevention is key to keeping this tick and disease away. So you had mentioned about when you're walking through the woods, stay on the main trail. Other things, you can make sure you keep your grass cut short, any wood piles, keep them away from your home. And you also mentioned about eliminating the ground cover. What else can you do to prevent this?
Okay, well, of course, for people, it's important that they wear light-colored clothing. And the reason for this is that you want to be able to see the tick if it's climbing up. If you have light-colored clothes on, it's much easier to see. You want to tuck your pants into your socks. Sometimes outdoors people will even use duct tape around their pant leg and their sock to prevent the tick from climbing under their, pant leg, and you wouldn't see it, whereby if it has to climb up further, the theory is that you have a better chance of seeing it. And since it's the size sometimes of a poppy seed, it makes it very difficult to see. So the light-colored clothing, pants in the socks, there are different types of sprays, if people want to go that route, that they can use. There are DEET-based sprays. Those kinds of sprays can be used on people, on their skin, and you need to check the manufacturer's directions very carefully if you decide to use those.
Are there any organic products that could be used instead of...
There are, but and some of them have just come out recently, but so far the studies that I have read, I haven't seen anything yet, any recommendations coming out of the CDC or anyone saying that these particular products have been fully tested for ticks yet. They are testing them, but the data isn't there yet that I have seen. Okay, there are also permethrin-based sprays that can be used on clothing only. You don't ever use those on your skin. And those get sprayed on your clothing away from your body. You spray it on the clothes, you leave it dry, you put the clothes on. And those can go through a number of washings according to the manufacturer. But if you choose to use any of those things, you need to be really careful.
Now, if you're outside, it's possible a tick can get on your scalp or under your hair. How is it possible to spot these ticks, especially when they're the size of a period or a sesame or poppy seed? How are you supposed to spot those?
Well, that's a good question, and I wish I had a better answer. I can only say that it's recommended that you do thorough tick checks every time you are in tick-infested areas, which unfortunately in the Northeast we all are.
Right.
And so you need to check very carefully and maybe comb through your hair with a fine-tooth comb. And, of course, you'll have to check with your fingers, especially at the hairline. In children especially, they like to go in that hairline.
Now, speaking with children, though, when they're playing outside all day long, you're supposed to wear long pants. How do you keep the kids when it's 90 degrees weather in light-colored long pants and hats and long sleeves?
Unfortunately, having raised three children myself, I don't know the answer to that one, but I will tell you that, again, if ticks don't like well-maintained lawns. So if you do keep your lawns short, and you rake up any leaf debris. Again, if you do have wood piles, you keep them as far as possible from your residence because, of course, little mammals like to live in there, like mice and things like that. So if you do those things, you have a better chance of, keeping your children protected if they're playing, out on that well-maintained lawn.
Now, if your lawn meets woods, if you have lawn and then backs up to woods, is it true that you should have 3 feet of wood chips or mulch or some kind of gravel to kind of protect it from the woods to your lawn?
Yeah, some people do believe that that is helpful, and some feel that's a visual barrier, that people will be reminded of that, and others feel that the ticks might not be as likely to, cross over. But that is something that some of the health departments are recommending.
Right. And another thing, keep swing sets, right, away from the woods. If you have children and swing sets, keep them in trees or woods back there. Keep it closer to your house.
Keep the swing sets, out probably in a sunny area is the best place because, again, ticks will dehydrate if they are out in the sun.
Now, when you do the tick check, I know there's certain areas, you had mentioned already a few of them, just take us through. I know there's between your toes and behind your knees.
Right. Any creases and folds in your body, any hairy areas of your body, those are places that you particularly need to check. But I'll be quite honest, from my experience, ticks will bite you anywhere. But those are the areas that are some of the most likely places.
And I know the CDC actually recommends if you have any ticks, if you're outside and you do spot them on your clothes, they recommend removing them before you go indoors. And to kill any ticks that you may have missed, wash your clothes in hot water and dry them using a high heat for at least an hour.
Yeah, actually, there have been some studies showing that putting clothes in a dryer for a half an hour or 40 minutes, is effective because, again, that dehydrates the ticks. From my understanding from the papers that I have read, is washing doesn't really do that much good. But putting them in the dryer does because, again, they get dehydrated.
Does anything else, if you were to bring something indoors, accidentally a tick, could you spray any kind of like Lysol on it or anything like that to kill it? I know you're not supposed to put petroleum or any kind of gasoline, but is there any household product that you could use?
Well, first of all, let's address that issue a minute. When you're talking about, for example, the gasoline, Vaseline thing, that is for tick removal. You never want to remove a tick by putting anything on it. And the reason for that is because the tick can regurgitate into you or into the animal that it's attached to anything it has inside it, which might include Lyme disease, babesiosis, ehrlichiosis, anaplasmosis, Bartonella, or other tick-borne diseases that are found in this area of the country. So you want to be very careful not to put anything on it. So that's what the recommendation against those things are. If you find a tick in the house, generally speaking, first of all, you don't want to touch them with your fingers, and so you might, I don't know, a lot of people do various things with them, but some people stick them in tape, and I've heard of that. Some people flush them, as far as spraying chemicals on, I mean, I don't know if you want to do that in your home. You know, that's a decision that people would have to make. If they do, it would have to be a chemical that would be what's called an acaricide. That's usually a permethrin base that I mentioned before product, because those things kill ticks. The other products don't.
For those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to Health in 30. I'm your host, Barbara Ficarra. Joining me is Pat Smith, president of the Lyme Disease Association. Okay, Pat, if you find a tick, don't panic is the first rule of thumb. What else do you do? I know you use a sharp, fine, pointed tweezer.
Okay, well, again, I go over the steps, and what I usually tell people is what you don't do sometimes is more important than what you do do.
Okay,
what you do not do is you do not put Vaseline, gasoline, nail polish remover, as I mentioned, anything that would irritate the tick. You don't put anything on the tick. You do not burn it. That used to be an old-fashioned way. People would light a match. You don't do any of that. Again, the reason is because if the tick has these dangerous bacteria and other entities inside it, that if you irritate it, it will inject those into you. So you don't do any of that. So what you do is you take a fine pointed tweezer as close to the skin as possible, and you pull the tick straight out. And then put antiseptic, et cetera, whatever on it, on the area where you remove the tick from. And you can save the tick for testing. There are tick testing laboratories throughout the country, and sometimes your Department of Health will test ticks. Individual departments of health have individual, rules on that, so you have to check with them. And you can save the tick if you decide to save it for testing, you should try to keep it moist and alive if possible. Only they can test it dead, but I understand they get better results if it's alive.
Should you put it in a jar of alcohol?
No, don't do that. Because it can alter it in some way and make testing a lot less reliable.
How long can you keep the tick for before you bring it into a center to be tested?
Oh, I don't think there's any limitation, but you should keep it moist. Let it to be dehydrated. Though with some of the newer techniques, I understand, they do a pretty good job anyway, but you want to probably keep it alive and moist if possible. It's my understanding, again, that it's better testing. And what you do is you put it in, you can put it in a Ziploc baggie or in if you still have film, a film canister or a pill bottle or something that's tight-fitting lid, take it in, or there are places you can send it. And if you send it to a lab, they'll tell you the procedures. They'll tell you what to do with it and how to ship it, et cetera. And now today, these labs can often test for not just Lyme disease, but many of the other tick-borne diseases carried by the same ticks.
One thing I want to point out about the tweezers is make sure everyone has them in their first aid kit at home, because you don't want to be running to the store to purchase tweezers at that moment when you find a tick.
Right, that's correct, because there's a reason for that, and that is that the longer the tick is attached, the greater the chance you have of acquiring Lyme disease from the tick if it has it. So you want to try to remove it, as quickly as possible. Also, there are tick removal devices that you can buy that have a little slit in them. There's various ones, and then you push that slit between the tick and your skin, and then you can pull the tick off. That way, you don't touch the tick, you don't squeeze its body in any way. So you can, carry one of those devices also.
Now, after you take the tick off, you disinfect the area. Can you use alcohol to disinfect that, or an antiseptic? I'm sorry. Use alcohol, or do you need something specific?
No, not to my knowledge, but that,
Oh, okay.
Better asked of a physician, but my understanding is alcohol will do.
Okay, and then it's important to record the day and the area of your body where you found it, and keep it in your health records, and note the general health at the time, so you can kind of keep track to see if you have any forthcoming symptoms.
Yes, a lot of people do that, and additionally, if you happen to develop a rash, which, by the way, less than 50% of people who are bitten and get the disease develop the classic bullseye rash. So a lot of people think, oh, well, I don't have to worry if I don't get the rash. That is not the case. Less than 50% of the people get a bullseye rash. Some people get no rash at all, or you could get different types of rashes. So, yes, you should, certainly, check where you were bitten, and definitely look for early symptoms. Also, some people may want to go to their physician, and some physicians do believe that prophylactic treatment, helps, and some physicians will give prophylactic treatment. Others will not. That's something that's in dispute. So, but you can certainly, contact your physician about it. And check that out.
Right. And some other symptoms to watch for, fever, chills, fatigue, headache. What are some other ones? Swollen lymph nodes?
Yeah, muscular pain. Usually it's a flu-like illness, possibly a low-grade fever. Though with some of the other tick-borne illnesses, you may get a higher fever. You can actually almost present with any symptom. That's part of the problem with Lyme. The symptoms that you mentioned are common ones that occur with people when they first develop the disease, but that's not the ones that always necessarily occur. And also, symptoms don't necessarily occur right away. You may get bitten, and it may be weeks or months before symptoms develop.
Now, these symptoms, though, can mimic something else. So suppose you had a blood test done, and you have some of these symptoms, and the blood test came back negative with these symptoms, and indeed, though you do have Lyme disease, then what? What's the next course?
Okay, let's go over that. First of all, the blood tests that are currently being used, which are called ELISAs, those actually don't test for the presence of the bacteria. They test to see what your antibody response is. How much antibody is your body producing? That is not necessarily the best way to go here, and oftentimes your body isn't producing a large amount of antibodies. Maybe not enough time has elapsed to produce enough to test for. Or there are other things that happen chemically with antibodies with Lyme disease, and so you may test negative and still have the disease. So your doctor should not be relying on these blood tests. The doctor should be making what's called a clinical diagnosis based on symptoms, history, excluding other illnesses, and using testing as merely an adjunct to that.
Now, if you have some of the other symptoms, if you do have Lyme disease and it went untreated, and you start becoming more progressive with the symptoms, with arthritis, memory loss, or facial paralysis, numbness or high fever. What would be the next course, though? There would be oral antibiotic treatment for if you're tested early enough, and then you would have an IV antibiotic. Is that correct?
Okay. What happens is different. It depends on sometimes the symptoms that you have. You know, people who have central nervous system Lyme, that means Lyme has already gotten into their central nervous system, maybe into their brain, wherever. What happens is those patients are often treated with IV medications, though sometimes doctors today will even use oral medications for central nervous system Lyme. Oral medications can be used in combinations with IV. They may be used, they may alternate. Also, there's something called intramuscular injections of antibiotics that are oftentimes used. Sometimes insurance companies don't want to pay for IV, or doctors feel that the risks of IV may be too high, and there have been studies showing that intramuscular injections of certain antibiotics may be useful. So they can either use orals, intramuscular, IV, or they may interchange those or maybe perhaps use in combination thereof.
How many symptoms does a person usually get? Can it just be one symptom, or is it a whole host of them? Is it, say, for instance, just maybe joint pain, or would they have the others on top of that as well? So how, clinically speaking, is it one symptom, or would it be many?
Okay, well, it's a good question. Unfortunately, there's no, like Lyme, everything else in Lyme, there's no simple answer. There could be one, you could present with a single symptom, but oftentimes there's multiple symptoms. And Lyme can attack every system in your body. And so, therefore, you just don't really know, what's going to happen. I know that Dr. Fallon at Columbia University in New York, I believe he had a case where a person only presented with psychiatric symptoms. There were no other symptoms that were found, and it turned out it was Lyme disease. So it's hard to say. The symptoms sometimes can be vague, so maybe people don't recognize them. It's unfortunate that it's multi-systemic, and there's so many degrees of symptoms that you can experience, and you don't always get them in any set order. So it can be very confusing and, diagnostic picture.
If anyone has any questions, they can call in at 845-624-1300. It is such a hard disease to diagnose. What's the latest research? Are they working on another vaccine? Isn't that true? There was a vaccine at one point, but they had pulled that because it was not working the way it was supposed to, or intended to?
There was a human vaccine on the market. It was pulled by the manufacturer, stating poor sales. In actuality, what happened also was that there was a percentage of people who were developing problems from that vaccine. And they were developing, it appeared, some possible autoimmune arthritis and some neurologic problems. And we still have physicians who are dealing with some of that from those who got the vaccine, as to whether that's what led to the manufacturer to remove it. I can't say. But nonetheless, it was removed from the market. So currently there is not a human vaccine. There are some vaccines, I understand, being looked at in Europe and possibly here. I don't know when those may be available. I know there are some problems with the way the initial vaccine was that they would need to overcome. And as far as the latest research, what we're hoping to do is actually our organization, the Lyme Disease Association, along with our affiliate in Connecticut, Time for Lyme, we're partnering with Columbia University in New York to open an endowed research center for the study of chronic Lyme disease. It'll be the first of its kind in the world, and we're about $200,000 away from opening that center. So we're pretty excited about that. Also, there are bills in Congress, H.R. 3427, S-1479, which are Senate and House bills that are identical, and they will provide $100 million over 5 years for Lyme disease research, physician education, prevention activities, and also the formation of a task force. And the reason this is very important is because right now the level of expenditure for Lyme disease is not high, considering Lyme is the most prevalent vector-borne disease in the country today, which means a disease carried by, you know, insects and ticks.
Now, New York has the highest rate. Is that correct? New York and then next Connecticut?
The last couple of years, what's happened, in 2004, New York was number one in cases, Pennsylvania number two, and New Jersey number three. In 2005, the final figures, I haven't seen yet. They usually come out from the CDC in August of this year.
Oh, okay.
But the trend right now is that Pennsylvania will be number one in 05, and New York will be number two, and New Jersey number three. Now, that's in reported cases. You know, there may be a difference in per capita cases, which is a little bit different.
Right. What would be the reason that they aren't reported?
Oh, lots of cases aren't reported. As a matter of fact, the numbers that the CDC has reported, they themselves will tell you that they equal 10% of actual cases that meet their criteria, their reporting criteria. And unfortunately, first of all, doctors aren't doing a lot of reporting.
Okay.
And yeah, that was shown in Connecticut, which stopped mandatory lab reporting a couple of years ago, and their case numbers dropped by 80%.
Okay. We have a call. We're just going to take that. So
sure.
We'll address that caller. Hi. You're on WRCR. Hello? Oh, I think we lost them.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry, Pat? We lost Pat. That about wraps it up for today. This has been Health in 30 on WRCR AM 1300. I'm Barbara Ficarra, and I would like to thank Pat for joining us. Next week, tune in. We'll be talking about how you can take charge of your health care, questions you must ask your nurse and doctor, and what you can do to help prevent medical mistakes. Health in 30, real health news for real people. Always speak, ask, know. The Health in 30 website is under development, so now you can reach me at healthin30@aol.com or call the station 845-624-1300. Have a great day. See you next week.
Tell your friends, there's always great music on AM 1300 Radio Rockland, WRCR.